Because of listeners like you, Preborn has helped to rescue over 67,000 babies. Your $28 to sponsor one ultrasound doubled a baby's chance at life. Your tax-deductible gift saves lives. Please join us in this mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.
Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I love talking about the things of God because of truth and the biblical worldview.
The U.S. Constitution obligates our government to preserve and protect the rights that our founders recognize come from God, our Creator, not our government. I believe that Scripture in the Bible is very clear that God is the one that raised up each of you, and God has allowed us to be brought here to this specific moment in time.
This is Jenna Ellis in the Morning.
And of course, this is not Jenna Ellis. With you all week is Bishop E.W. Jackson sitting in for Jenna. Hope she's having a restful time. And I've got the cons. So, folks, that is the controls. let me be quite clear about my nomenclature here. I don't mean the con man. I mean the connection, the controls here. I want to thank AFR for the opportunity and thank all of you for tuning in and supporting our network. And we're just grateful to God for you. We really are, because we couldn't do what we do without you. So keep up the good work. And for all the entire team at AFR and the AFA family of organizations that are supported and assisted in all that they do to try to help save our country. So God bless each of you for everything. All right. Well, look, we've got a big program ahead of us today. I'm going to be taking some calls in the final segment. But I want to start with something that I find a little bit humorous, which is, I don't know whether you all caught this news that Snoop Doggy Dogg, I don't even know what the guy is. I forget what the guy's real name is, but what can you say? But he's a grandfather now, of course. You know, but you know, things like this just it reminds me, folks, of what an amazing country we have. Because these people started out as true pariahs. You know what I mean? I mean, true pariahs. They were gangster rappers. They were throwing around all kinds of profanity. They were calling for killing cops. They were using the N-word persistent. I mean, I would never listen to that garbage, and I just denounced everything they stood for and represented. But nevertheless, you know, that's how they got started. Now they're doing kids' movies. now they're doing these family-oriented promotions. I mean, it's just amazing to me how wonderfully forgiving our country is, and how. You know, these guys, I would love to talk to one of them one day and say, now tell me, given how fabulously successful you've been, most of them convicted felons, most of them with no formal education, given how fabulously successful and wealthy you have become, what do you think about an America that allows this to happen for someone coming from your background, who began by basically really singing about how terrible America is and how racist America is and all this. And here you are, probably at the top 0.1% of the people in this country in terms of your wealth, your influence, you name it. I would love to hear what they have to say to that. You know, Dr. Dre, who is also a convicted felon, when they were having the big controversy, y'all remember the big controversy about people paying to get their children into the schools that they chose, and they were bribing officials and all that. And Dr. Dre came out and said, I don't need to do all that. He said, I gave a $70 million gift. So I think it was the University of Southern California at, I forget exactly which one, but he gave a $70 million gift to the University of California. He said, when it's time for my daughter to go to college, I know where she's going. I guess so, with a $70 million endowment. I mean, think of this. Convicted felon, gangster rapper, giving $70 million to a university and not even missing it because he's a billionaire. I mean, well, do I need to take but a split second to say why I love America? You know, because this is, This can't happen anywhere else on the planet. And by the way, I'm not fans of these guys either. But it just really is a testament to what happens when freedom prevails, when people are free to make their own choices, they're free to chart their own course, and people are free in a free market system to respond to them. Now, I mean, I've never bought a single dime of their music, but obviously millions all over the country, and indeed, I'd suggest all over the world have, because they started a movement that went worldwide. I mean, it's pretty much gangster rap all over the world now, in different languages. So at any rate, but it's just interesting to me. So that the forgive the background stuff, but it's worth saying. But anyway, he takes his granddaughter to a Disney movie for children. And in the midst of the movie, I mean, part of the movie is there's a lesbian couple and they have a child. And during the movie, during the children's movie, the lesbian couple kisses, which is why I wouldn't set foot in Disney World again. I'm done. I took my children there twice when they were growing up. And I basically stopped going once I found out about the so-called gay days they were having. I said, oh, my goodness, girl, I can't believe it. Yeah, but they've been doing that for folks probably 2 or 3 decades. They've been recognizing this homosexual perversion. But it's also a haven for a lot of pedophiles. A lot of pedophiles land at Disney. Not that, you know, that's necessarily Disney's fault, because pedophiles go where children are, right? But I think Disney caters to it. I think basically they wink at it. So at any rate, grandchild says, how can two women have a baby? What is with the two women kissing? And he says, but in a very funny way, but they blinked out a lot of stuff. So I guess he used some profanity. And he said, man, he said, y'all threw me in the middle of this. I didn't go to the movie to start trying to answer these questions, man. And he was just talking about, this is ridiculous. Why do I have to try to answer these kinds of questions for my granddaughter at a children's movie? So he was being a little humorous about it, but it was clear he didn't like it. What place does that have in a children's movie? And they think we're some sort of conspiracy thinkers because we believe they're after our children. Of course they're after our children. Why would you put something like that in a children's movie? Unless you're after our children. But at any rate, I just thought it was funny that the former gangster rapper, now grandfather, is complaining that his granddaughter is being exposed to things that she should not be exposed to. So, and by the way, it doesn't surprise me, because I can tell you all that whether it's the West Indian influence or just the old Southern moral influence, I can tell you as a cultural matter, and I think this is probably true across the board for most ethnic groups, the black community has absolutely no tolerance for homosexuality. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't sanction hatred of people or anything like that. But I can tell you that they just don't. And generally speaking, and these elites, these politicians, these Hollywood types who are all in on that, they are completely out of sync with the black community. But of course, when race is the primary identifier, you know, you overlook pretty much anything because the person looks like me, which is ridiculous. And I think I told you all, I heard, speaking of another gangster rapper, heard Ice Cube say that he was trying to sign to his little basketball league. I don't mean to denigrate it, but it's a, you know, three, it's sort of the 3-on-3 deal, but apparently it's doing very well. He was trying to sign Caitlin Clark, and they asked him about her nemesis, who happens to be a black player, about signing her, and he said, well, she just doesn't bring the revenue. She doesn't bring the audience. So, wow, here we have a revelation. It's about the economics. It's not about the skin color, because according to leftists, you said, well, you should just hire the black woman anyway, because after all, she looks like you. Ice Cube said, no, she doesn't bring in the revenue. That's where our society needs to go. And isn't it amazing that it seems like even even people with whom we have very little in common in terms of our overall values, but even they are coming to the realization that something is very wrong, and what's wrong is not racism. What's wrong is a cultural and moral degeneration that is even impacting their children and grandchildren, and even they don't like it. So, folks, that tells me there is hope. Get some of these people saved, and who knows, they could become some of the greatest warriors for righteousness you've ever seen. Okay, well, I wanted to mention that, but look, let's come back to Washington, D.C. The president, this is an amazing statistic, folks. This is amazing. There hasn't been a murder in Washington, D.C. in 12 days. Not a single murder. And I guarantee you, there were murders happening in Washington, D.C. pretty much every day. I don't know what the overall, but close to it. And in 12 days, there hasn't been a single murder. It, just like closing the border, what we're learning is these politicians who tell us, well, you can't do anything about this, like Pritzker telling us there's nothing wrong with Chicago. Chicago's fine. It's just it has crime like any other city. There's nothing we can do about that. That's just the nature of the. What they really are saying is, we don't care. We don't have the will. We don't have the determination to do anything about it. And frankly, we don't care enough to exercise the will to do something about it. So we're going to leave things just as they are because we're too busy pursuing power. That's our game, not serving people, but power. And President Trump comes in and says, we're going to get this done. We're going to do something about this. And lo and behold, suddenly we have results. Simply by exercising the will to do something about a situation that desperately needs attention. The president comes in. He says, we are going to secure the border. And the border is secured. Wow, how could that possibly work? Well, it works because when you have a president who cares, he makes it work. I mean, folks, it's really not rocket science, is it? So thank God the president is getting something done here. He's also now attacked cashless bail. Which again, you all understand the reasoning behind that, because again, this is the kind of stuff that nobody wants to talk about. This is a Marxist idea. Remember, Karl Marx believed that you should not have prisons in a capitalist system because prisons are simply the result of people who are deprived by capitalism doing what capitalists do, getting resources any way they need to. So they're not really bad people. They're really victims of the capitalist system. I mean, that's the theory. So you don't lock them up. What you do is you recruit them to the revolution. But you don't put them in jail because that's unfair. That's unjust. You add the patina of race to that, and now you've got, well, you know, if they're black or they're Hispanic, if they're as they like to say, if they're black or brown, it's clear that they are victims of our system, and you don't want to put them in jail. So that's sort of the underlying perspective on this. But then you add bail to it, and they say, well, and because they've been deprived of this capitalist system, they don't have the resources. See, wealthy white people can get bail. They can do it. And they failed to mention that most of the people going to jail don't come from wealth, regardless of the color of their skin. But of course, let's not let facts and truth get in the way. They can't afford bail, and so it's not fair to have bail for them. And so what you do is you let predators back out on the street to prey on more people, murder more people, rape more people, rob more people. And what matters is that our agenda is being furthered and our quest for power is being furthered. And we don't really care what is happening to the innocent law-abiding citizen on the street. That's the Marxist worldview. This is Bishop E.W. Jackson in for Jenna Ellis. Back in a moment.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
So speaking of this mindset, this Marxist mindset that says, you know, you can't, it's not fair to punish people because they're victims of a capitalist society and they're only doing what capitalists do. They just don't have a legitimate way to do it. So they end up having to rob people and steal from people and kill people. So Karl Marx didn't believe in prisons. Of course, once communist regimes take over, guess what? The prisons explode, because now they explode not only with anybody who commits a crime during the communist regime, but they explode with anybody who doesn't agree with the communist regime. So you want to talk about mass incarceration? That's what they do. But leaving that aside for the moment, let's come to this issue that is very much in the news, this California illegal alien. This illegal alien, who I should say, because he's not California, he's an illegal alien. He's from India. He was licensed in California as a truck driver, and he ends up killing three people trying to do a U-turn with his tractor trailer in Florida. Now, this is a rather amazing story, because change.org, and folks, have you ever heard of change.org? I think I have, but I looked it up and did some research on it. They're obviously a leftist organization, and they do petitions for leftist causes. And so they claim to have over 2 million signatures on a petition in behalf of this guy who killed three people driving his truck. Frankly, illegally, and California is really, California ought to be sued by that family, because as far as I'm concerned, they are complicit in the murder of these three people. And yes, in my view, they were murdered because they put somebody on the road who had absolutely no ability to properly navigate, because he couldn't speak English. He couldn't read English. How do you know what the signs say? I mean, how do you do that? And by the way, can I just pause and share with you all a pet peeve of mine? And I want to know whether you share it as well. Now, look, I don't care what they say. I'm not xenophobic. I don't hate foreign people or any of that. I love my country, and I want the very best for my country, and I do believe I have a responsibility to put America first, and I'm not apologizing for that. But do you often get the feeling that companies are going out of their way to hire people who just got here, who can't speak English or can barely speak English? I can't tell you how many times using a driver in some circumstance, sometimes even in the airport, I have to say repeatedly, could you repeat that? Could you repeat that? Because the person's accent is so heavy that I can't even understand what they're saying. I've had that happen on customer service calls, where I'm calling into a company to try to get something done and somebody gets on the line. And I've actually had to, and folks, I mean, I don't mean to be rude and I hate to do this, but I have to, because it's a practical matter. I can't communicate with the person. And I'll say to the person, you know what, that's okay, because I really cannot understand you. Let me hang up and call back and see if I can get another person. And the person will say, okay. Because it's exasperating. And my question is, how are you hiring these people? Of course, we know some of them are in foreign countries and they're operating remotely, probably working out of their homes, I would expect, in some cases. But how do you do that? How do you hire people who are going to deal with English-speaking people and they can't speak English? Or their accent is so heavy. I mean, surely when you interview them, you know it's difficult to understand them, and you stick them in there anyway? I really don't get that. But that's a phenomenon that's happening across the country. In fact, I go to places. I mean, I travel a lot, so I'm in airports a lot, and I'm amazed at the number of people in airports who do not speak English or speak it very poorly or with a very heavy accent. And I'm thinking, why aren't Americans filling all these jobs? Do we really not have enough Americans to fill these jobs? And I just don't believe that that's the case. I believe that there's an intentional effort to basically hire these foreign people because maybe you can pay them less. They're grateful for the job, and basically they won't give you any trouble because maybe, who knows, some of them are probably illegal immigrants. It's just really exasperating because I'm thinking about, what about all the Americans? What about all the young people in need of work? All the young people trying to get started. And you got these folks, and clearly it's a startup job because if you can't even speak the language and you can do it clearly, and a young American could do it. Well, at any rate, this guy ends up killing three people and they have this petition. And I've read the petition, folks. And I won't bore you with it because it's all about it was a fatal accident and we should not mistreat him and he had no criminal intent or history and it was a catastrophe and he had no prior. Oh, they're just singing his praises and what a wonderful person he is. And, I read the entire petition and you know what I was looking for? And I didn't find it because it's not there. Not a single sentence in empathy with the victims. Not a single sentence. Now, folks, is it just me? When I open it up for calls, I really want to know what you all think. Is it just me? I'm thinking if I agreed with them on trying to make sure that this driver was not unduly punished or harshly treated, if I agreed with them, and I don't, but if I did, I'd like to think I'd at least had the sense to say in the process, now look, we must never forget the victims, and I know this is a terrible thing, and our hearts go out to the families, and we need to figure out how we can help them because they must be suffering terribly right now as a result. Right? I mean, you would think you would say that to show that you're not heartless with regard to the victims, the innocent people who did nothing wrong. This man did something wrong. He's in our country illegally, and then he's got California complicit with him in doing something wrong. He's taking a job that an American ought to have, and he kills three people in the process. You would think, wouldn't you, that there would be some expression of empathy for the victims? Not a single word. They never mentioned them. And it's something you hear me say all the time. These people don't care about us. They really don't. Jesus said, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. The reason why nothing comes out of their mouth with regard to the victims is there's nothing in their heart with regard to the victims. They don't care about the victims. They're not interested in them. Because again, the message they want to get across is, if you are an illegal alien, we're going to fight tooth and nail to make sure that you can get in here, that you can stay here when you get here, and that you ultimately support us in our quest for power. That's really the message. And every time they step up and support one of these people, what's the message to the illegal alien communities in our country? Man, these people will back us no matter what. They will back us no matter what. If I ever get citizenship or even without it, I get to vote, I'm going to vote for these people because these people are with me. They are with me. Now, I don't know whether to believe over 2 million people signed a petition because I don't trust these folks. But regardless, they're communicating this message. It's being reported, and that message is going out too. Look at all these people who support somebody who is an illegal alien and he's killed three people and they're still overwhelmingly supporting him. What about the victims? Oh, well, the victims, we don't have time for that. Yeah, we don't have time for them. Folks, this stuff is evil. It really is. It is evil in the cities. Now, as to this driver, while it is true, and they say this, he did not intentionally set out to kill someone, there's a principle in the law that says when you do something that you either knew or should have known, a reasonable person should have known, could end in the death or injury of another individual, you will be held accountable as if you did it intentionally because you should have known what it would lead to. It's just like, God forbid, somebody takes something they think is an empty gun and it's a joke, it's a game they're playing, and they point it at somebody's head and say, look, click, except there's a bullet in the chamber. Now, they didn't intend to kill that person, right? That person's dead. But they didn't intend to kill that person. They were playing. They were joking. They thought it was funny. It's stupid and not realizing you don't play that way. But, okay, we know that there was no murder in that person's heart. But you know what? That person gets treated like a murderer because they knew or should have known that when you point a gun at someone's head, there's a chance that you could be wrong about the chamber being empty, that you could have made a mistake, and it could end up injuring or killing that person. And you should have known that, and therefore you will be held accountable as if you did it intentionally. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that you will be held accountable for first-degree murder, but you're certainly going to be held accountable for murder. Even though, given the fact scenario I've just given you, you did not intend to kill anyone. So, same deal. You're driving a tractor trailer. You can't read. You can't understand the English language. I mean, that's a formula for disaster. And sadly, that to me is like the idiot who picks up a gun, thinks, oh, well, this is not, it's no big deal, it's not loaded, and points it at somebody and pulls the trigger and has ended someone's life. And then they jump up and down and say, oh, well, but I didn't intend it. I didn't intend it. I didn't intend it. Yeah, but you know what? You behave so recklessly that we're going to hold you accountable as if you did. I tell you what, there wouldn't be any petitions coming out of the left for that, would there? Because they'd be, maybe there would be, because they'd say, it wasn't his fault, it was the gun's fault. Right? I'm surprised they're not saying, it wasn't his fault, it was the truck's fault. Because they're very mechanistic in their thinking. You know, they don't like the idea of holding people personally responsible, because that's not Marxism. Marxism really believes that people are essentially good, and if they do something bad, it's because the system has somehow propelled them into it. And that's why when you change the system, guess what? You make everybody good. Oh, yeah. In a communist system, everybody's good. Because the system produces good people. Well, you know, that's about as big a load of horse manure as you ever want to ever have. Because people are not essentially good. Without God, people are essentially bad. The heart of man is deceitfully wicked above anything. Who can know it? But he who knew no sin was made to be sin for us, that we might be made. I have studied that passage through and through, and that word made is the word genomai. It means created. Our word Genesis comes from, it's the Greek word, our word Genesis comes from it. It is created. He who knew no sin, but that we might be made, created the righteousness of God in him. We are new creatures in Christ Jesus. That's where the righteousness comes from. It doesn't come from us. It comes from Almighty God. And this idea that, oh, people are really good, but that capitalism makes them bad. Oh, brother, that is just so infantile. Well, you know, Marx himself, I don't know whether you all I've ever had a chance to. I've read a book. In fact, I'm going to see if I can't find it during the break. But I read a book about Karl Marx's spiritual perspective. Karl Marx was satanic. He really was. He was satanic. He had a very, very dark, bleak, murderous imagination. And I want to think it was Victor David Hansen who wrote a book about that. But don't hold me to that. But yeah, Marxism is really akin to Satanism. It's really akin to demonism. Because Karl Marx was extremely demonic. When you read about his life, the way he treated his family, you know, this whole thing about the family is nothing but a vehicle of exploitation. Well, he took no responsibility for his family whatsoever, at any. As far as he was concerned, his family was there to support him in his communist musings. He was not there to support them in any way whatsoever. He couldn't care. He could care less if they starved, and often they did, depending upon his family, upon his father to send him money, upon Friedrich Engels to give him money. I mean, he was a mooch. The man did not believe in working. He believed in being a parasite on others, and that because he was the great Karl Marx, others should be only too happy to have him as their parasite. This stuff is, and these people have imbibed our colleges, our universities. They have absorbed all of this stuff. And even though they don't label it necessarily Marxism, they don't label it communism, that's really what it is. Look, in the segment coming up, I'm going to start taking your calls. The number is 888-589-8840. That's 888-589-8840. Let me take a moment to mention the Project Standathon we're working on. It is a celebration of our country and Constitution, July 4th to September 17th, 76 days, believe it or not, 76 days exactly, counting July 4th to September 17th from Independence Day to Constitution Day. Back in a moment.
I want you to picture this. Her name is Kayla. She is 17, alone, terrified, and pregnant. Sitting in a clinic, tears blurring, thinking abortion is her only option. Until she was offered a free ultrasound, paid for by a hero just like you. The moment Kayla heard her baby's heartbeat, the decision was made. And today, her little baby boy, Gabriel, is thriving because preborn walked with Kayla every step of the way. Now, multiply that by 38,000. That's how many babies preborn has helped save just this year. How many mothers preborn has come alongside with practical and spiritual resources to make motherhood possible. But here's the most important thing you will hear today. Their goal is to save 70,000 babies by the end of the year. And they can't do that without us. Every $28 provides that ultrasound, the moment everything changes. Will you be the reason the next Kayla chooses life? The reason Gabriel fulfills his destiny? To donate, dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or donate securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
Welcome back to Jenna Ellis in the Morning on American Family Radio.
And this is E.W. Jackson in for Jenna. Hope she's getting a great rest, and I'm enjoying myself being able to be with you all the entire week. As a matter of fact, I'll be here tomorrow and right through Friday. So thank you all for tuning in. The number is 888-589-8840. Let me just tell you, we're in the middle of Standathon. Well, I'd say in the middle, not really quite in the middle, because this is day 54 of Project 76, which began on July 4th and will end on September 17th, with an all-day live stream, by the way, on Constitution Day. And look, what are we taking a stand for? We're taking a stand for restoration of America's Judeo-Christian culture and values.
restoring marriage and family as God designed it, deracializing America. That's a concept we've come up with, that we need to end this obsession with race that the left just doesn't want to let go because, of course, it's, again, their pathway to power, divide and conquer. Supporting law enforcement and our first responders and our military people to help save our country from crime and chaos and disorder, and to protect the sovereignty of our country and the safety of the American people from those who would destroy us or subjugate us. And then, of course, providing educational choice. We've got to get out of these schools of indoctrination and get our children into true education where they actually learn facts and information and really learn to think and to analyze, but also develop their Christian character to be good Christians and good citizens, responsible citizens of our constitutional republic. Help us to do that. Go to standamerica.us, that's standamerica.us, to give toward Project 76. There are a number of levels of giving. And by the way, we're taking sponsorships for the Constitution Day Standathon, because we're hoping that we'll have sponsors for every single hour, 10 hours, starting at 9 a.m., ending at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. We're hoping it will have sponsors for every hour to focus on the various projects. We've got our Family Restoration Institute that we're working on. I'm going to work with American Family Association on that, the importance of the family. Stand with law enforcement to develop good relationships with our law enforcement people. And on it goes with various programs. We got a school. We've got the Maximum Potential Christian Academy, which we ultimately want to turn into a boarding school one day to get these children out of these environments that only chew them up and spit them out and just put them on the conveyor belt to prison or early death. And sadly, rebuilding the family is part of that, because part of it is, you know, it's sad when, you know, you have to say that part of the child's problem is the family or the lack thereof or the circumstances in which that child is being raised, which can be, can be the child's worst. Talk about a disadvantage. So that's the child's worst disadvantage, which is why the devil steps in and puts gangs and all this stuff in front of the kid and says, this is how you become a man. Pick up that gun and kill somebody. You know, go rob somebody. That's how you exercise manhood. Oh, what a perverse way of life that becomes. And yet, sadly, that's what is producing the crime in Chicago and in D.C. and all over the country. And we got to crack down on these people. Don't get me wrong. You do the crime, you're going to do the time. You kill somebody, in my view, in cold blood, you forfeit your life. But long term, we've got to produce citizens who know what it is to respect life, to respect their fellow citizens, and respect our country. 888-589-8840 is the number. We got calls coming in. Let's get right to them. Let's see. We've got Jerry in Texas. Jerry, welcome.
Hey, brother. Good talking to you again. Love listening to you. Like your podcast.
Thank you, Jerry.
That you do. Miss you on the regular. I was a truck driver for about 10 years and did that when I was younger. And when I had to do that, I had to take a test, a written exam on different functions of tractor trailers like that. Now, I couldn't just take that exam. I had to go to a school, and I had to be licensed. And then they passed this, and I'm going to be real quick. Then they passed this law that states every year somebody that has a CDL has to take a physical. Now, why is it so difficult for me as an American citizen to do all of these things and get this license to have a lifestyle? Yet somebody that doesn't know our laws, doesn't know our traffic abilities, can come over and just get the ability to do that and operate such a big piece of equipment.
And Jerry, and can't speak our language.
Correct. Now, I had to have a proficiency in traffic signs, right, and an understanding of the traffic laws. It seems to me that other states, Texas being one of them, should sue California.
Yeah.
That's just me.
Well, Jerry, I think you are completely on point there. Some those victims, by the way, whose names we still don't know, their families should be suing the state of California, because California, as far as I'm concerned, is complicit in their death. Let's go to Dick in North Carolina. Dick, welcome.
Thank you very much, Bishop. According to the news reports, this man has been in this country since 2018. That's 7 years, and he hasn't learned the language. When I joined the Navy, I was sent to Spain. They encouraged us to learn the language and provided classes so that we could learn the language. I learned it well enough that I obtained a Spanish driver's license. And believe me, I had to be able to read the road signs and pass the test in Spanish to do that. They wanted us to be good ambassadors off the base as well as do our job on the base, and encouraged all of us to learn the language. And to some extent, everybody that I associated with, all the other people on the airbase, NAS, learned the language to some extent. I learned it. I was, you know, very prideful of the fact that I learned it well enough I could pass for Hispanic once before I left there after 2 years.
Well, Dick, thank you so much for the call. Look, let me enlighten you and everybody else. Are you all ready for this little insight? Okay. You can't ask people to learn to speak English when they're here because that's racist. Oh, you didn't know that? Oh, yeah, you can't. You can't do that. Who do you think you are? You think they ought to be able to speak English just because they're in an English-speaking country, the United States of America? What kind of racist are you? I know, folks, that's absurd, but that's the way these people think. So, yeah, I mean, President Trump has said English is America's official language. Do you remember how when that issue came up, most of you have been around long enough to remember when that issue came up, they screamed bloody murder. You can't do that. That's racist. You can't do it. You know, it's just basic common sense. You're going to function in an English-speaking country. It's like you were functioning in Spain. You got to speak the language. I mean, come on. But again, this racial obsession syndrome stuff, which is a way of trying to make everybody's a victim, and you're exploiting them, and we Democrats, we're saving them from you terrible racists that are going have the audacity to require that people be able to speak English in order to function in our society. What kind of horrible person are you? All right, folks, it's insidious. It really is. Let's see. Let's go to Marla in Mississippi. Marla, welcome.
Hi, Bishop. Hi. This is Maria in Mississippi. Oh,
Maria. Sorry about that, yes, Maria.
Oh, that's okay. My nephew is in jail right now, and we are so, as a family, we are so thankful that there is bond for him. We are refusing to pay that bond. He has mental health issues and is addicted to drugs and is in jail because of intention to sell drugs. We want him in jail to not only pay for his crime, but to get the help he needs that we are unable to get him.
Yeah. You know, when done right, Maria, incarceration has its advantages. And, of course, there are a lot of people who go to prison and they get their lives together. They get off drugs. In fact, a lot of people go to prison and get saved and come out and their lives are transformed. I know. I've met many of them, and they're wonderful people. I've said there are people who have committed crimes and gone to prison who come out and God has gotten a hold of their lives. I would trust them with my life. That's how much I believe in them. So you are right. I mean, done properly, it is the best thing that can happen for some people. And I hope that your loved one comes out and really is able to live a happy and normal life after that experience. Thank you for the call, Maria. Let's go to Mike in West Virginia. Mike, welcome.
Thank you for taking my call. It's nice hearing from you again. I wish you had your own show once again.
Thank you.
And I think we need to do everything we can do against Marxism. And I think it's a shame that nobody's been to the moon since December of 1972.
Wow, you've covered the gambit there, Mike. Mike, thank you for the call and thank you for the compliment. By the way, folks, I do have a podcast, and I know some of you, because you're listening on the radio, not listening on the app or anything, and so you're not conversant with that. But I do have a podcast on American Family Radio, so I still am a regular contributor. It's on every week. It posts on Wednesday morning, so I have a new podcast that will post tomorrow morning. So I am still part of the AFR family. Love doing a daily program. Grateful for that, but also grateful for being able to do the podcast that I do now. So thank you, Mike. Let's go to Jerome in Texas. Jerome, welcome.
Yeah, Bishop, can you hear me?
I certainly can.
God bless you, Bishop. I'm so glad that you're here. And I have a dilemma, because I know that if I ever disagree with anything with you, then I'm probably wrong. But I just see a mitigating circumstance with this one particular illegal immigrant. And it is because I also drive for a living. I drive for Amazon. And, you know, you can get into a terrible accident and kill somebody, which is criminal enough and negligent enough. But then this has got to be the most unlucky guy in the world. He has the other added factor of also being here illegally. But I hold California more accountable for his accident than I hold him. And, of course, I mean, God bless the family, and all our hearts go out. And I can't grieve enough for them, because, you know, I got children, grandchildren, and so on and so forth. So let me know what you think about that.
Well, Jerome, listen, you and I are not, we're not in disagreement there, because I really do think he would not have been able to do what he did had it not been for California establishing itself as a sanctuary state and then facilitating someone like this, putting him on the road with what we all know is a dangerous instrument in the wrong hands. I mean, my goodness, a tractor trailer. And by the way, folks, you know, again, maybe we need to have tractor trailer control, you know. Because any object in the hands of the wrong person can become a dangerous object. And my goodness, if there were ever an object that could become dangerous, a tractor trailer is. So look, I do not disagree with you. Of course, I believe that this person is personally responsible too, because, I mean, come on. You know the disadvantages you're in. You know the situation you're in. You also know we have a president now who is not playing around with this illegal immigration stuff, and you're driving a tractor trailer across the country from one state into another? I mean, come on. So, yeah, he's going to do some serious time for this, but I agree with you completely that California is complicit. As far as I am concerned, they are as responsible for the deaths of those three people as is this driver. So you and I are not in disagreement, brother. So you can rest easy. You know that you are not wrong. Okay, let's come to Frank in Mississippi. Frank, welcome.
Hey, brother Jackson.
Hey, Frank.
Pleasure to talk to you. It's the second time I talked to you. It's been years and years since I cleared up a question with you years ago. But anyway, I wish you had a church in my area. I'd go to it.
Well, thank you, brother.
Let me ask you about slavery, the beginning of slavery. I think it was Thomas Sowell years ago I read about. That white man went to the shore. They didn't go into the jungle and pick up people. The tribal leaders brought them to the white man, and they sold them, and they got money for them. Was that actual beginning of slavery?
So, yeah. That's essentially true.
People don't hear that no more. People don't, you know the news media is so stinking corrupt. But they don't tell you the truth, you know, the beginning of slavery. So it was the black tribal leaders that sold their own brothers into slavery, you know?
Well, Frank, thank you for the call. We're almost out of time.
I
love you too, Frank. There's a whole lot more I could say about that, because it's really even worse than that. Because remember, slavery really began as an instrument of conquest. So basically, one group, one tribe conquered another, and they enslaved the people that they didn't kill as part of their subjugation. The Atlantic slave trade was not a slavery of conquest. It was strictly economic, and it was started by the Africans who were already enslaving sub-Saharan Africans, and they taught the Portuguese that they thought that slavery was even more lucrative than gold. Okay, folks, that's going to do it for today. This is Bishop B.W. Jackson and for Jed and Ellis. God bless you, and I'll talk to you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.
Preborn's whole mission is to rescue babies from abortion and lead their families to Christ. Last year, Preborn's network of clinics saw 8,900 mothers come to Christ. Please join us in this life-saving mission. To donate, go to preborn.com/AFR.